Hi, Bill.
Hi, Paul.
Great for you to be here. I'm so glad that you agreed to come and chat with us. You are one of the founders, and I get to see you around once in a while in different functions. And so I want to start by thanking you for what you created. And I know that we're in our 35th year. We're going to have a celebration coming up here next year, which is going to be kind of exciting. I know that we no longer are worried about whether we're going to be around. What we're more concerned about is what are we going to do in the next 35 years? What are the changes that we're wanting to make? And what are the different pieces? So we're more into forward thinking around organizational that way, as opposed to surviving, which we spent enough time doing. And so that's exciting. So that's just kind of where we are. So I guess where I want to start, Bill, is tell me about the beginning. What I do know is that there was a hippie, there was a Marine who worked for General Motors, and then there was a professor who also had his kind of had his one foot in the intellectual world and the other one in I don't know about hippie, but he was on the left side of center. So these are the three guys who sat at a kitchen table. I think there was more to the story, the prelude to that. But talk to me about that experience. Talk to me about where did that come from inside of your guy and yourself.
Sure. I've told the story a few times before. So
yeah,
here goes. In the early 80s, I was a psychotherapist. And the powerful social force during that era was the women's movement. And I saw that and I appreciated what they were doing the more I read about, healthy feminism at the time. So I began identifying as a feminist therapist. And I in my heart, it just felt right. It was authentic relationships. And at some point early in 84, I was invited to the Wisconsin Biennial Feminist Therapist Association meeting. Mm-hmm. And I went and I discovered that out of the 125 feminist therapists there, I was the only guy. And I had done an awful lot of inner work, so I had the eyes to see, and it was during the break on the second day, and I was standing there with all these other feminist therapists, and I could see their interdependence, their connection, their consciousness, and something just came over me. It was like, damn it, somebody has got to do something for the men. And that finger pointing out kind of poked right, and I went, oh, geez, and it was, I tried to push it away. It was like a divine call coming in, but I couldn't, and it was stuck. And then I became like obsessed then to do something for men. And I ran into my old friend, Ron Herring, who you'd mentioned was a university professor in curriculum. And he had done a lot of inner work. He and I had spent many, many weekends together doing gestalt training through the Milwaukee Gestalt Training Group. And I said, Ron, we got to do something for the men. And he said, Bill, I don't know what you're talking about, but I got five sons and whatever you're up to, I'm in. Cool. So then there was this other guy that I had been getting to know named Rich Tosi, and we'd done some emotional cathartic weekends. And so I'd seen his heart. I'd seen his fierceness and I'd seen his grief and his sadness and just all those parts of this beautiful man. And he was working for General Motors at the time.
Yeah.
The part I didn't know, it was that he had done 10 years in the United States Marine Corps. And I invited him, and he saw my enthusiasm. He said, I don't have any idea what you're talking about, Bill, but boy, I like your energy. I'm in. Let's do it. So then the rest of 84, we met around Tosi's kitchen table, as the legend goes. And literally, we operated as peers from the very beginning. There was no hierarchy. We just knew there was some task calling us. And we put together the training, launched it in January of 85.
So hold on a second.
By the end of that training, we knew we had something brilliant. We could see the results so fast.
So let me get this straight. So this January 85 was the first training. Mm-hmm. You guys first met up when? Sometime in 84?
No, I had known Ron for,
Years. This, you sat at his table and you started to put this together. You had this aha moment. Yeah. And you got these two other men, Rich and Ron. That was in 84, right?
Yeah, it was in 84. So we probably spent 6 months prepping and cobbling it together. And, each of us, at some level, we're pretty ordinary guys from Milwaukee. But another level, each of us had a certain brilliance that we brought to the party. And because we had no hierarchy, we just allowed we called it decision by passion. If one of us had huge passion for a certain piece, that's what flowed.
Right. Okay. So You make it sound like no big deal here, okay? I mean, like six months, you created a training that is now 35 years old, has affected tens of thousands of men in our world, the premier men's organization in the world, my judgment.
It is.
And you made that sound like, oh, well, no big deal. We just got together. And there had to be some moments, Bill. I mean, there had to be some moments when you were sitting around the table and there was got to be, I mean, maybe I'm nuts here, but there's a Marine and a hippie and an educator.
I was the hippie guy, and Tosi didn't even like me very much because of that, but he was completely in, and Tosi had a certain ferocity that Ron and I, as kind of new age nice guys, just didn't have. And it was, that was, as you know, has become an imperative part of our training. And because we've each done so much emotional cathartic work, and we were learning accountability, I remember Ron would come in late and make some lame excuses, and Tosi would say, God damn it, Ron, you're late, and just call him right out, and Ron would try to defend. Next thing you know, they're hugging and crying and snot all over the all over the linoleum, you know. And when we get done with that stuff, then we'd sit down and we would just flow, and our genius would connect with each other, and it was beautiful. So,
well, I'm taken by, in this conversation, I'm really taken by, you know, the magic mystery of this. I mean, it's like, I believe in callings. I think that I'm in this role, and I'm in this work, not because I set out to do it. In fact, in each role I've taken, I've turned it down first, only to realize either from myself or my wife that I was nuts to not do this, because it was more than me that was bringing me there. So this is happening to you. You've got this experience. You got these women are actually delivering this to you by their behavior. I think that's what I'm hearing from you. You're watching this and thinking, why can't we do that? So that happens, and then you run into these, you know, this one man, but you kind of know this other man. We're talking about Rich, and
and
you pull them together. And so what you pull together, either consciously or unconsciously, are three diversely different spirits.
Yeah.
Really. And you just described for me the accountability part of the weekend with what happened. Yeah. When Ron came in and Rich said, wait a minute. And so it almost sounds like you guys created that from your own experience in part.
Yeah.
Oh, well, let's put that.
We were living it. Yeah.
Yeah.
And indeed, Ron had a PhD in curriculum. That's what he taught at the university level. So all of those sophisticated pieces in the training were pretty much his. And the ferocity, the greeting, and all that hard masculine stuff came from Tosi. And I just added in where I needed, I was actually kind of the marketing guy. I was the one that held it together, you know, and loved it and nurtured it and made sure it didn't die and just got her rolling. And the truth is, and we collaborated on damn near every piece, like all three of us would add in. And
So what does it feel like? I mean, 35 years later, you have vivid memories, vivid memories of that experience.
Yeah.
I've heard you talk about this a few times, and each time there's another little piece that gets delivered. Mm-hmm. So this is in your bones. I have more to say, but let me just ask you this. What does it feel like? 35 years later, here I am talking to you, some guy you never knew before in your life. And
it's been a fabulous ride. And, you know, the truth is I'm just a regular guy. I just live my life every so often, though, you know, something comes up that just touches me to tears when I see how this work touches other people. Like right now, we're moving into South America and Africa, and that honestly, something about that really touches me. Mm-hmm. And, you know, just a little bit ago, we were talking about the MacArthur Foundation and the fact that we've applied for like one of the biggest grants I could even imagine. Yeah. And we've got a good crack at it. And I read that proposal very carefully, and that touched me to tears. Like, oh, my God, we really are doing this with such potency and impact all over the world. That actually really does touch me a lot.
Yeah. Well, just in my 5 or 6 years since 2013, just in that period of time, I've really watched the project just blossom. And I mean, unless we get some additional funding along the way in some form or another, we're going to be running faster than we can imagine, because it's just taken off. The weekends are getting stronger. The circle work is broadening into different approaches. We're doing a lot of virtual work. It's just exploding. And of course, the timing right now, there's a lot of focus on men who could use some work. And we all have, you spoke about being a regular guy. We're all regular guys. What I want to recognize in you is that you listen to your heart, and, I'm sure had a little resistance at somewhere, but you listened to your heart and you kept putting one foot in front of the other. You were willing to take risks, ask men to get involved. The sparkle in your eye and this, the passion in your heart won them over. There they are. And it won me over. Here I am. I know that you were the first stop I had. I in 2013, I went through the weekend, and it wasn't 4 months. It was less than 4 months after that. I was the I group coordinator for the Northwest. And of course, you're living in Ashland in the Northwest. Yeah. And Karen and I are driving down to go to our home in Southern California, and in our little camper. And sure enough, you had time to see us, made us lunch. It's just this, there's this warm, comfortable, wonderful family. We call it a brotherhood, but it's not just us brothers. Mm-hmm. It's just wonderful. So you created just an amazing thing that certainly affected my life in a positive way. And so I'm so grateful for, most importantly, your willingness to follow your spirit, follow your passion, and follow your heart. I'm really grateful for that. So
thanks. It's been my joy.
Yeah. So thanks. So Bill, I really want to be grateful again for you being with me and sitting with me. I want to hear some of the new stuff. I know that you have a couple of projects that you're real passionate about. One that's creating lodges, and I know that there's one in the Northwest that's just gotten launched. And then tribes. There's been that piece that's been coming along. Do you want to share with me a little bit about that?
Sure. That's my current passion and work is helping people build ongoing, long-term, local, face-to-face, what we're calling tribes or personal communities of people that are committed and bonded and learn to love each other. And it's kind of like an I group, where your best friends turn out to be the 8 guys that you're in group with. Uh-huh. What a coincidence. So we're doing that deliberately for men and women together in tribes of like 14 to 24 people. And they meet every week. And our tribe's about 6.5 years old now. And we take a holiday and make a recommitment ceremony every year. And we're just doing an online course right now to be able to take it out into the world. And our brother coach, Chris Kyle, that's what he does professionally. He's helping us launch it out into the world. So very exciting stuff. And I do want to share the stuff about the lodge too. We had a lodge meeting on Monday night. And again,
stop before you get. I want a couple of questions about the tribes. I know there's a lot of passion. What stimulated that for you? I know your wife, I think, also was in this with you. Didn't you guys? You're doing this together. What happened inside of yourself? What was it that made this come alive in you? Just like you shared with me, in the last time we met, you shared with me about you went to this gathering of professionals, and there was all women and you, and you saw how these women related, and bingo, here comes MKP. But share with me, what was it that got you passionate about this tribes piece?
Yeah, I've always wanted community. I don't have any siblings, so I have to look outside, and I've got 80,000 brothers now, but I wanted something else. I wanted, and my wife Zoe, we met at Burning Man, we discovered both of us had this passion for community. So we took it real seriously and decided that, we wanted that kind of energy. When you go to a seminar, or the warrior training is a good example. We call Sunday Joy Day, because the men's hearts are so open and they're just flowing and they just love each other to pieces. And then they say goodbye, like you do at most of these seminars, and you never see anybody again. We wanted to have that feeling in our lives consistently once a week. That was our goal, and we did it. We figured out how to bring people together, how to train them in certain skills, how to carefully choose them, and then set together a structure. in which we can literally come together and practice the kind of intimacy where we fall in love regularly and consistently and have that energy. And so because we've done it for ourselves, we know we can take it out to others.
So is this kind of like a circle group, or do you have dinner and then just do this together? Or?
No, we party together all the time too. In fact, tomorrow night's my 76th birthday, and we're having a big party right here. And most of the tribe will be here for that. But no, our meetings are mostly growthful, sometimes playful. It's not built around food. We will often have, if it's an evening meeting, we'll have a little snacks and a glass of wine or something with each other.
Yeah.
No, those 2 hours are sacrosanct in terms of our being together to practice learning to love each other and grow as people.
Well, I and others who are watching this, I'm sure we're going to, can't wait for Chris to get that out so we can
yes.
check it out. That's good. Okay, let's talk about the lodge. I know that, like I said earlier, the Northwest, specifically the Puget Sound community, has opened a lodge.
Yeah, I'm so pleased. This Salish Sea MKP Elders Lodge is up and running now. And the Ashland MKP Elders Lodge has been going for 3 years now. Mm. And we have, basically, it's a structure. It's not just we did that for years. We got together in somebody's living room with the elders and we'd check in and talk. And it was nice, but there was something missing. So when we restructured it as a lodge, we built in three things. You have to come in through a sponsor. You have to serve a provisional membership time. Then you have to make a promise to the principles of MKP and to be there for each other. Mm. So it's not just a light drop-in thing. We actually have each other's back, and there's something powerful about that. And Monday we had our monthly lodge meeting, and the topic was vulnerability and shame. And the men checked in, and 20 out of 25 guys just opened their hearts. It was just stunning. The level of intimacy that was collected in this group of men sitting around the lodge. We meet at the Grange, which is one of the old line lodges. Yeah. Speaking of which, we've actually modeled this after the old Elks and Moose and Odd Fellows and Knights of Pythias of our great-great-grandfathers, and it worked great for them. So we simply borrowed the basic principles, and it works great for us.
Oh, great, and, great. 25 men, that's a big circle, 25 men.
We're actually 35. There are several guys that called in, they couldn't make it, and we keep growing. It's really lovely. 150 years ago, men created those lodges because it was a tough time for men. They were coming off the farms, and they go into the factories and the mines, and sometimes they get killed, and there's nobody to take care of their family. So they literally built these fraternal organizations to take care of their families, to take care of each other. It was what we now call a safety net, a social safety net. Mm-hmm. Because it didn't exist then, they built it themselves. Then Social Security came in and kind of picked up all that slack, and they lost their primary function. But we're going into a time in the world right now where we're seriously going to be needing each other. So we're a little ahead of the curve again in terms of building lodges, where we're literally practicing taking care of each other with commitment.
Wow.
Yeah.
So is that kind of back to the question, around the other project, what drew this for you? What stimulated the fact that we were needing to take care of each other more deeply? I what you were building, there's always something that's a passion, but it's always something that kind of makes this happen. So what, tell me about that.
That's actually a damn good question, because, despite the fact that as visionary, I've been studying the state of the world for about 20 years, I know what's going on, and it's seriously not pretty. But in terms of starting both the lodge and the tribes, it's really about intimacy and connection.
Yeah, see, I was
that's what people really want.
That's right where I was going. I mean, the two pieces. So the lodge is about intimate connection, but the lodge is about men.
Yeah.
And so is there something in addition to that kind of connection? Is your hope that that kind of group could take on projects that would be useful and helpful? No?
Uh-huh.
Okay.
There's a difference between bridging groups and bonding groups. Bridging groups reach out in service to somebody, in service to kids or women or homeless people. Bonding groups, it's all about us. So that's all the I groups are bonding groups.
Right, exactly.
And you probably notice that once those men get bonded, their lives start working better. And then they go and they find their transpersonal mission that they got from the New Warrior Training Adventure. and they create projects. You've watched all those videos of, you know, hundreds of fabulous brothers all over the world doing fabulous projects.
But
the group itself is a bonding group, and our lodge is a bonding group, and so are our tribes.
So do you, okay, so having said what you just said, do you foresee, like the I groups, do you foresee those groups, men in those groups and those couples in those groups, finding ways out in the community to make a difference?
Oh, sure. No, we've seen it over and over, of course. Mm-hmm. They're always doing projects. And then they invite, say, anybody in the tribe want to join me on this project? And the same thing happens in the lodge. You know, somebody will say, hey, I just found out about this march that's going on for, you know, climate change. Anybody want to join me? A couple of guys will, you know.
Yeah.
So it's all voluntary, but the entity itself is not about activism.
Yeah, so I get this. The body of the group doesn't take on projects. People in that body can take on projects and then bring it to the group.
Yep.
So that empowers men through the healthy, what happens to them growing and becoming more healthy in those groups, maybe sends them to that other way of being. Okay. You amaze me. You amaze me. At 76 years old, you have more energy than most 40-year-olds I have. And I aspire. I turned 70 in 2 weeks, so both you and are Libras. So that explains why we get along so well. We're both Libras. But I'm hoping that, you know, this entry into elderhood for me has caused me to be, it's a bit of an emotional drain, energetic drain, as I'm learning the connection between what some call first half of life, second half of life. And I'm really enjoying noticing the difference. It's been been going on for me since I was about 58.
You know, there's a great quote from Carl Jung. He says, we spend the first half of our lives figuring out who we are, and then the second half trying to forget it. He says it in a little bit more sophisticated way. But, you know, we've been doing the four quarters in a certain way forever. And way back about 25 years ago, an error was made, and the king and the magician are in the wrong place. The king is actually in the west, and the magician, which is the sage elder shaman, is in the north. And then it becomes a time map and goes around. So I'm actively suggesting that elders need that map with the time part of it so that they know where they fit in the time cycle so that they can act appropriate to that.
Oh, this will be good. I'll want more conversation about this.
Yeah.
It's been an amazing journey for me, but it has been, particularly in the role I have in MKP right now as the chair. I've been in leadership my whole life, in one form or another, in these kinds of positions in different organizations. The two things that are different for me, being in leadership in this organization is completely different than any other organization I've worked in. Completely different. It's a heart-driven organization. And it's, you know, it's full on 99.9% volunteer. And so, so that adds to that. And there's more that I'd tease about, but I won't. So the organization is different, and that is my way of being is different. And so this is the first, it's been 6 years. Well, I mean, I started the MKP stuff probably 4 or 5 years into this change for me, and I hadn't been in leadership for when I went into that, what one could call dark night of the soul. When I went into that space, into the beginning to build the bridge across the two times of my life, I wasn't in leadership. So now I'm in the leadership, and now I'm in a big way leadership, and there's this a little bit of confusion around, okay, well, this is what I used to do, but there's no juice. It doesn't feel right. I don't like it. I want to listen to my heart. I want to listen to my intuition. Well, can you trust that, Bob? Well, yeah, you try to, and then you don't. And then you... So it's an interesting little journey. So I don't know why I got into this conversation, but I think I just am taken by your spirit. I'm taken by you know, the passion that you're willing to follow throughout your whole life. And I'll never forget, and I hope we get to have time again, that the way you took me in, you know, I think it had been, like I said, 4 months as a brother when I met you. And you just brought us both into your house and took us in. And then, of course, I see you get to see you around at different functions. So.
Yeah.
Thanks, Bill, for being who you are, for being part of who's made my life worth living, and part of many men have been so affected by your willingness to live in your heart and your passion. So thanks.